Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Our first guests today are the class of 2024. They all sat their leaving cert in June. They're all 18. Well, ish, Sophie, you're not 18 till Wednesday, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So happy birthday in advance. So that's Sophie Hines. And Sophie, you're from Rathcoole in Dublin. You just started a PLC course in radio and podcasting in Ballyfermot College. Jack McGinn, you're a first year student in the University of Limerick. And Lynetta Wang, you moved from Ireland to Ireland from China 4 years ago. You're currently on a gap year following your leaving cert last June. So you're all very welcome. We might start maybe by getting you to introduce yourselves briefly. Jack, tell us about yourself.
So my name is Jack McGinn, I'm 18, I'm from Limerick City. So I suppose I live in my house with my sister, who's 15, and my parents. And yeah, I go to College, University of Limerick, and I'm studying law and accounting.
Okay, Lynetta?
Hi, I'm Lynetta, and I'm 18 at the moment. I did my leaving cert this summer, and I'm going to study pharmacy at Trinity next year. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous.
Okay.
I am currently on my gap year, and I moved here 4 years ago during COVID in 2020 with my dad due to his work.
Okay. And Sophie?
My name is Sophie. I'm from Rathcoole. I'm currently in my first year in Ballyfermot College doing radio and podcasting. I really hope to go far with that. I live with my dad, and yeah, I'm really excited to be here today.
Okay. So listen, don't be nervous, Lynette and Nunny. That was the hardest bit now, okay? So now it's just a chat. And I am very curious, and all older people out there are very curious to get a look into the heads of the class of 24. So Jack, for most of the class of 2024, the Leaving Cert was your first state exam. And then it struck me that, like, I think for a lot of people my age, like, we've kind of blotted out COVID now. It was a blip in a kind of in our very, very long lives. But for ye, did it kind of ruin your teenage years?
Yeah, I suppose what you said there about that was our first state exam. So like years previous, everyone would have sat the junior cert or the junior cycle exam. So we had none of that. So June this year was our first experience really going into the room and it being a formal state examination. I suppose that was quite nervous, and that was probably a big knock to us as a year group, and you're comparing us to year groups that gone by.
And did you miss out on a lot of other normal coming of age experiences
as
well?
And there's a social aspect. You know, we would have been, I think we went into lockdown of about, was it maybe some point between February and April of 2020. So we would have been in second year, or I would have been in second year. And we really didn't kind of go back to normality till probably the halfway through when we were in TY. So, you know, second year, third year TY, when you're kind of in those formative years as a teenager, and you probably get those chances to make the mistakes and learn the various social, you know, skills you need. We didn't really get that. And we were kind of inside, you know, without our friends, without doing the regular things in life. So that was, I think that was a big knock to our year group as a whole.
Yeah. Well, you know what the good news is? You have your whole life left to make loads of mistakes. Don't worry, like, you'll keep making them. Sophie, you did do the junior cert, then you missed out. You didn't do transition year. You kind of had a double whammy with COVID, a more complicated situation, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I came back to school from COVID, must have only been back a year, skipped TY, and I got sick at the start of fifth year. So I left school for a year to do my treatment, and when I came back I was, you know, a bit into sixth year and straight into prepping for exams. It was honestly crazy. I mean, I was still recovering, and I missed so much time due to COVID, due to, you know, I lost so much socialization. I didn't have anywhere to go during COVID. I was in lockdown like everybody else, and then I was back to being isolated again when I was in fifth year, and I was really only getting the chance to properly grow in school and make friends and meet new people.
Yeah. And do you think you've bounced back from all that now?
I do now. I think that I'm having a great time. I'm in college, and it's the first time I'm properly, you know, fully having that experience from start to finish of being healthy, being happy. I do now, yeah.
Great, great. Lynetta, you moved to Ireland in 2020. So you, on top of there being a global pandemic, a huge culture shock as well, I'd say, was it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think at the beginning, it was during third year. And at the beginning of third year, I remember my year head was actually telling me it was a perfect time to start at the new school because of the new measures, because of the mask, of the transparent plastic barriers between tables due to COVID. It was as if people actually didn't know each other back then and we had to learn our new side as a new person. So,
okay, yeah,
transitioning in wasn't much of a big issue. I think the pressure was actually, for me at least, it was more of an academic pressure because there are a lot of differences when it comes to the curriculums, especially now after learning English. And for me, the most difficult thing is to learn about Irish history and geography in the Irish curriculum because many of the stuff are just very different from what I knew. Therefore, I had to put in a lot of effort and then to learn all the textbooks in 1 year instead of 3 years as other students in my class. So I was genuinely glad that the junior cert was cancelled for that year because it would have been much of a disaster, let's just say.
Okay, yeah. And Camille, apart from the curriculum, what was the biggest difference between China and Ireland?
There are, let's say, a lot of different aspects to it. So, for example, the social lives are very different here in Ireland and also in China. So let's just say when people go out, especially for young people, there are loads of like different options when I was in China. And when it comes to restaurants, of course, it's a bit different as well. But in Ireland, I think it's a bit like... let's say the options are not as wide.
So what kind of options in China that we don't have here for
I think
people?
It's more, there are options that are kind of similar, but I think it's more about how many people are doing it and how people actually prefer to do different activities. So for example, I think in China, a lot of teenagers would prefer to do, for example, karaoke or go to malls when they are on a break. But I think those options in Ireland are just not as popular, but you could do that as well.
And do you keep up your connection with China and friends and family there?
For me, family, like I always call them on Sundays. So I always make sure to keep that connections going. But it was a bit different for me with my mom because my parents are separated. And for the first 2 years when I moved to Dublin, I just genuinely thought that this connection was gone for me. And because I didn't really get to talk to my mom even before I left China. And
okay.
But after 2 years in Ireland, my mom told me that I was going to have a half brother. And yeah.
She was having a baby.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
That was actually, so right now the little brother is actually the bridge between me and my mom. So every time I would call her and then to talk about my little brother, talk to my little brother as well, and then talked about other things. Kind of just like that, we kind of reignited our connection, let's just say. That was amazing.
Babies often solve everything, you'll find, as you get older. Now, no rush on anyone, but they are great problem solvers. So, Jack, the leaving cert then, when it did happen, is it as stressful and as awful a year and a time as we all remember it as?
I think for me, it was not so much about like the year that was in it, but it was that kind of, for us, definitely the pressure of not knowing what was actually really going to happen in June.
Okay.
A lot of that. Yeah. And I think for subjects like, you know, I, for example, done economics and there was a project in that we completed around Christmas the sixth year. So I felt a little bit like the pressure was alleviated somewhat in economics. But for the other subjects, I was kind of looking at my timetable. I was like, I'm going to have maybe 4 or 5 exams in the space of a week. And that kind of pressure of like, how am I going to fit everything in? Or even how am I going to go from maybe studying English to studying maths then the next day and having to try and keep that all up. I think that pressure was a lot on us. And yeah, I think you can, once you go through it, you kind of sympathise with, like, you know, the kind of so-called horror stories that you hear people talking about.
Yeah, you see, even when you put it like that like 4 or 5 days decides so much for your options in life and that you have to pivot from one to the next one. Sophie, did you find it stressful?
I did. I think, especially coming back to school so late in sixth year and learning, because I had so many side effects, learning how to actually study in a different way and dealing with those side effects in the classroom, it was very difficult it was very stressful trying to know what to do, what to say. And then you're sitting in an exam room and kind of skimming over books 1 minute before the exam starts, and you're building all this anxiety up in your head. It's really daunting.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about that year off. So having, like, it was cancer, wasn't it?
Yeah,
having
it was.
Such a serious illness as a teenager must be very tough on you and the family, like, before you went near any leaving cert, is it?
Yeah, of course. I think that I was quite lucky in going back to school because of what I'd been through, in that my parents weren't putting as much pressure on me, because it was more so our main thing is that you're healthy.
You knew what was important in life.
What's important.
Yeah.
That is also a bit of a challenge, though, when you're going back and everybody's biggest thing is the leaving cert. And you're like, guys, I'm here. Like, let's do something. Let's go out. I've been gone for a year. I'm back.
Yeah. Lynetta, how did you find the leaving cert?
Leaving cert was definitely a stressful time. As Jack has previously mentioned, it was our first big exam in secondary school. But also, I actually think that the elements of project kind of make the process even more stressful, personally for me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because most people would say, oh, if we spread it out over the year, it would kind of ameliorate the stress a little bit.
Yeah.
It just meant more stress.
Yeah, the thing is, especially during the year, not just at the end of the year. So, for example, I did two projects. I did the classics project and also the economics project. And the classics project was due a bit later than the economics project. But what I found was that for the project, we had to read a lot of papers, a lot of different resources. And sometimes we had to even contact professors in college and contact different people. And I found that really new. That process was really new to me as a secondary school student, and also how to basically catch the deadline for the project as well.
You're completely stressing me out, like, and I kind of feel like I operate at high levels of stress sometimes, but that's like what, doing that to 18-year-olds, God almighty. So then, in terms of the choosing the courses you're on, so Jack, you actually want to, you're doing law, but you actually want to join the Guards, is that right?
Yeah, so that's something I'm kind of looking into, is, like, you know, after my law degree, would I go on to maybe be a solicitor, a barrister, or maybe the Guards? But I suppose for me at the moment, the big thing is, like, you know, if you're looking in the news, like, the budget was last week or this week even. And I just don't think there's as much focus maybe from the government on public servants, you know, and you kind of see the crazy things that money is being spent on, rather than people who want to go into the public service and work. Because I suppose everyone knows, you know, you do get that job security in the public service, but in the private industry, you can really, you know, earn a really good salary and really good perks. So that would be kind of, you know, something that might steer me away from it.
So your heart would be in being a guard.
Yeah.
But your head is telling you otherwise.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's a shame.
So last Friday, I had an interview for the Garda Reserves. And then I found out yesterday that I was successful in the interview. So I'm going to go forward. Thanks. I'm going to go forward for, like, clearance and stuff.
So what would that mean then?
So the Garda Reserve is basically like a part-time, nearly group of members, like, drawn from the community. So they... you know, work, you know, hours that they can. It's not like you're not paid, but you do, I think, get a contribution, shall we say, at the end of the year for your service. But you have a lot of the same powers, the same equipment, same uniform as full-time members. So for me, it's kind of given me that chance to kind of go in and have a look and see, is this an organisation that I want to be in, and kind of form my own opinion, because there's a lot of opinions online flying around about the Guards. So I think that's kind of a good opportunity for me to maybe... for my opinions. But other than that, like, I think I probably wouldn't have in the end have really looked into the Guards, so I'm kind of happy that I get that chance to, you know, explore an option that I might want to do.
Well, fair play. And Sophie, how did you end up studying radio and podcasting?
Well, I was given the opportunity to spend a day in a radio station. I spent it at Christmas FM. And I was told by everybody there that Ballyfermot was just the best place to be. I loved the day on radio. I've always loved music. I love talking. So I think it's kind of the best thing for me. And I went on a few different radio stations and had a few different experiences. And every single person I came across told me that Ballyferma College was the place you need to be to actually succeed in it. And it's something that I'm just really passionate about. So I'm hoping that it all works out in the end.
I'm sure it will, on the evidence so far. And Lynette, you're actually on a gap year, are you?
Yeah, I am actually. Well, it's not really a difficult decision to make for me, because of the stress that I experienced in sixth year.
Really?
And I wanted to take a break to focus on something that I really care about in the year. But also, I think it was partly because of the COVID in TUI, and I feel like I've lost half of my TUI due to this.
Yeah.
So I think a gap year would help me to make up for that. So this year I have quite a lot of things planned. But one of the majority thing, one of the major thing, let's say, is volunteering at the Shona Project. And so the Shona Project is like a girls empowerment organization. And I am actually their first intern there. So I was working with them for a year and a half as a junior ambassador. But then when Leaving Cert came close, I approached the founder. I was like, hey, can I do more to contribute to this organization? And if it's possible, I would like to do an internship here. I don't need to get paid or anything. I just want the experience. And so that was actually how I got this opportunity. So in the year, I've already done a lot of things.
Such an admirable group of young people. Yeah. I'm ashamed of myself sitting over here. So do you all live at home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Currently, yeah. But I'm thinking of moving out as soon as possible.
Is moving out an option if you're going to college these days?
Not really, no. I mean, unless you're made of money. It's kind of insane prices looking at just a room in somebody else's house.
How much is a room in someone's house?
It depends. I mean, it's usually in the hundreds, but like there are certain rooms in places in Dublin that are going for a thousand euro a month. Like it's
okay, and that's sharing a toilet and all that. Literally a room. So then college, as we know, is mainly about the social life. Sophie, how your social life is good. I'm getting this. You're back on the scene with a vengeance, I can tell.
I'm having a great time. I'm 18, nearly 18. I'm out every weekend. I think that it's really healthy to be out and meeting new people when you're young and making new connections as well, especially when you're trying to make a career or have fun.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, yeah.
And Jack, does living at home cramp the style a bit when you're in college?
Yeah, I suppose, like, just if I'm in University of Limerick, so a lot of my friends from Limerick stayed at home and go to UL. But I suppose what we've all been kind of saying is, like, it's really difficult to actually make new friends when you're not living on campus, because you're kind of, you know, especially with traffic and everything, you're getting to UL and the minute your lecture's over, you're leaving, because why would you really hang around, you know? And I suppose that's what we felt, we see our other friends who are in like Dublin, Galway, Cork, Belfast or abroad, and because they're living on campus and they're making friends with their roommates, they're joining societies and they do that in their spare time in the evening because it's, you know, within a walk from their accommodation, they do that and they meet friends. Whereas I kind of feel like when we were living at home, it's just nearly the same old, and you're just...
Jack, I'm getting the subtext here, which is that their parents don't know where they are or what they're doing at any time. They're answerable to nobody except themselves. Lynette, what's your social scene like?
Currently, I am still living with my dad at the moment. And for me, just like Sophie, I go out every week and mostly in the weekends as well. And genuinely, I didn't do it when I was in sixth year or fifth year. So it's really new for me to have something to do every weekend. But then I think it really improved just me as a person to learn how to talk to new people. The communication was definitely key there.
Yeah. And do you go to the pub or where do kids go now?
Okay. Honestly, yes. I'm 18, so
it's no, you're allowed. There's no judgment here whatsoever. Okay.
Yeah. I go to a pub.
Does your dad know before now that you go to the pub? Is he aware of this?
Okay, yeah, he knows. He's okay with it. Yeah. I mean, he's listening to this, so yeah. And also, for me and my friends, we kind of have a tradition. So as six, we would go to a like a park every single week as well. So either to have a picnic or just sit there and chat. But last week we didn't do this because of the weather. And so we just stayed at somebody's house and played some board games and then chatted about different things in college, in life and stuff like that. So I think those kind of quality times, just spend time with your friend, because now we're not in the same school anymore. We're all in different places. And think like just a frequent get together would really help a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Because, okay, so when we, the old people, get together to talk about the young people now, the things we give out about are that you don't drink the way we used to drink, that when you go out in a night out, you all have your noses in your phones instead of chatting each other up, that you've no social skills, you meet people on apps and stuff instead of actually meeting them out and about. Is that any of that fair, Jack?
I think it's probably a bit of an over-exaggeration, to be honest. Like, I think life still goes on regardless if there's a mobile phone or not, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, as Lynella was saying, like, we still go out, we meet our friends. I think you'd be doing well if you could get a phone signal in a nightclub and be on your phone, you know. So I don't think that's right. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the, you know, in the media about, like, mobile phone pouches and locking away phones. But I don't think it's an issue that just young people are doing. Like, you know, some older people really love WhatsApp and Instagram now. And, you know, so I think we probably have a little bit better of a handle on it, though, because we grew up with it. So we understand it a little bit more. And I think we still put a lot of value on in-person meetings with your friends and understand those get-togethers. Like,
we can all calm down a little bit. Sophie, what about your relationship with technology? Has it ruined your life and rewired your brain and all that kind of stuff?
I don't think I'd go to that extent.
Yeah.
But I do think, I mean, there's definitely a culture of people using mobile phones, people relying a little bit on social media, or, as you said, dating apps is definitely a big thing. But I also think that it's the future. I think that technology is where we're headed. I think there's more jobs being created because of technology and social media platforms. And I don't think that it's as bad as certain people are making it out to be.
When you say certain people, you mean me. Okay, fair enough, I'm told. Lynetta, okay, answer me honestly. Do you spend too much time on your phone?
Okay, honestly,
your father's listening now. So.
You agree to this. I think I do spend a little too much time on my phone, especially this summer after leaving cert. And I think I was doing that to compensate, like overcompensate, for the time that I lost preparing for the leaving cert. And so, but right now I'm trying to improve on it. But also, I don't think that's really the issue of my phone. I think it's mostly the problem of my self-control. So it really depends on who is using the technology and also how we're using it.
I like it. You're not blaming the phone, you're blaming yourself. That's, listen, you haven't been living here that long, but you're Irish already. Beat yourself up. And come here, in terms of the stuff that it's the algorithms are feeding you and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, do you feel is that unhealthy, Lynetta? Does it damage your mental health, that kind of thing?
Yeah, to a degree, I do feel like that. Because let's take Instagram for an example. So basically, what Instagram algorithm has been showing me a lot is like jewelries, makeup, and stuff like that, which is fair. But I feel like there are certain algorithms, certain contents that the algorithm would prefer to show to the people, especially towards women and girls. And there are just other things that would just being kept away. So for example, I feel like those contents around body image, around makeup would be more easily shown to people than other topics like technologies or modern politics and stuff like that. So I feel like in a sense, the social media such as Instagram is kind of contributing to promoting a sense that you know, kind of a stressful atmosphere.
And you're not enough.
Yeah, you're not,
you
enough.
Not enough.
Yeah, basically.
Because, Sophie, I was thinking when I was young, right, I honestly know this is the truth. There weren't that many good looking people, like, and most people weren't done up most of the time, and the people were not well dressed, right? Like, a good looking person would have been notable in those days. Everyone knew who the good looking people were. Is there a lot more looks pressure and makeup and skincare and glam and all of that kind of stuff in the air now?
I definitely think there is. And I do think a lot of that comes down to the beauty standards that are being put portrayed. I think that social media is definitely pushing an ideal for mainly women to look a certain type of way. I mean, it's almost as if there are women who are teenage girls and are being expected to look like supermodels that are older, that have had surgery, that have had, you know, different things done to them. It's definitely a lot more prominent. I think even with younger girls, you can see even, you know, girls, preteen girls who are taking a lot of interest in skincare or makeup. And as much as that's nice and it's a nice thing to be involved in, it's also a bit like, you're quite young to be stressing about that already.
Yeah. They should do. What do they call them? The Sephora kids, the 10-year-olds now seem to be into their expensive makeup stuff. Come here. Is there a generation gap between you and your parents? Jack, are you like, do you see how you're like your parents? Or are you like a different planet to them?
Yeah, no, I think I'm like my parents in certain aspects. But I think maybe between myself and my parents and then their parents, I think we've a lot has changed in our time since maybe I was born. We're talking about like phones, technology, and like a lot of young people have cars now and all those changes. So I think as well, we're a little bit different in our thinking. Like, you know, we kind of grew up nearly in a society where you're like told to kind of challenge stuff and challenge, like, you know, and not be accepting that's just the way things are. So I think we're probably a little bit more inquisitive, I would say, and, kind of willing to actually get, you know, to the root cause of issues. And I think we're probably a little bit more tuned into society and what's going on in politics and in our country and stuff like that.
Okay. Is climate change important to all of you? Like, are you anxious about it, very eco-conscious, all that, Lynette? That'll be another kind of stereotype, I guess, of your age group.
I think that stereotype would be pretty much correct, because I feel like climate change is definitely an issue that I think everybody should really just learn more about. And I think the thing is to be informed about those sort of things. So, for example, like I personally is really interested in the issue of sustainability and how to make our lifestyle more sustainable, for example, and to reduce the amount of purchases, but not just the amount, but also the quality of the purchases and how to see how they could actually last very long. So I remember when I was studying economics in school, there was a question about sustainability, and what they would, the question was basically asking how we could promote a sustainable lifestyle, especially when it comes to sustainable clothing. And one other thing is do your research first. And so when you're purchasing stuff, especially new clothes, just do a research of the brand and the company and the production methods and stuff like that. And to make sure that you are contributing in a positive way to the cycle, and that the clothes that you buy will not end up in a garbage bin in like a month.
Okay.
Or even 2 weeks.
Will you all vote in the upcoming general election?
I'm not able to vote.
Okay.
I will, yeah.
Yeah. Will you, Sophie?
Yeah, I will, yeah.
And come here, if a politician comes to your door, what issues will you be asking them about, or what's important to you?
Well, I think the main one is definitely the housing crisis.
Yeah.
I do think that there just needs to be immediate change in it. I think that it's driving people out of the country, young people especially out of the country. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that I would be particularly worried about is the mental health sector in this country.
Yeah.
I think that the waiting lists for mental health resources for people is just ridiculous. It's not, people aren't getting help that they need the way that they need as quick as they need. You know, in people.
Have you seen that in your life?
Definitely, I have. I think that going through some of the medical things that I've gone through, you obviously need a certain level of help after those things, because it's a big change. It's something, you know, that's difficult and traumatic to go through. And it comes to a point where the mental health sector is so stretched out, it's kind of put to you as, here's a really long waiting list, and there are these people who we feel are in immediate, you know, they're a danger to themselves, they had to be helped. Even though you're struggling with something that's really serious to you, we can't get to you yet because it's not what we perceive to be so immediate. And it's tough, you know, there's waiting lists that are years long.
Yeah. So, like, for example, how long were you told you'd have to wait when you needed help?
I was quite lucky in that because of the illness that I had.
And that you were in a system.
I was in a system. I was in the hospital. I was an inpatient. I think there was something I went through before a long time ago, which I was told, you know, it could have been years that you're waiting on a wait list for dealing with anxiety due to, you know, medical illness and things like that. And it's kind of, well, it's not as immediate as this, and we have to get to this. So it could be 2 years, could be 6 months.
Just on that, before we finish up, can I ask you all, is there a mental health crisis among your generation?
I definitely think there's a lack of support that doesn't do
okay.
it. Even what Sophie was saying there about like the kind of investment into it. Like I know this year or this week there was just so much talk about schools and mobile phones and pouches, and I think it was 9 million the government are going to spend on it. But if you actually looked up for CAMHS, which is obviously the Children and Adolescent Mental Health Service, they put 2.7 million into that. So you put three times as much money.
Yeah, but no, there is a lot more money goes into CAMHS as well, but I think everyone accepts
that
it doesn't work in a timely fashion.
So
what you would say is that we think of it as a mental health crisis of a generation. You're saying that the crisis is that people are not getting the help they need in a timely fashion. Okay, so listen, all these people are saying, great to hear these young people on the show. They're inspiring. The guards are lucky to get a good young man like that. Great young people there. They give you hope for the future. Lovely to hear these intelligent young people on there. So there you go. A plus plus to all of you. Well done. And thank you very much. Sophie Hines, Jack McGinn and Lynetta Wang. Aren't young people fantastic? They're a tonic, really, aren't they?